Hello, everybody. Welcome to Teal Tinted Glasses Reborn, Episode 4. Tonight is the night you've all been waiting for. We are pulling out the dead carcass of the San Jose Sharks, and we are going to cut it wide open and see where everything went wrong. With me first is Dr. Zach Devine.
Hello, everyone. I'm ready for the autopsy.
And also with me tonight is the wonderful At Hockey Jerk.
I've been preparing for this for the last 4 years of medical school. I'm ready to get my hands dirty.
I'm not going to lie. I have no medical training whatsoever, so I'm just slicing in.
But you do live relatively close to a Holiday Inn.
That's true. Absolutely. All right. Let's start with, well, where do you start with an autopsy? You start with the head. And in this case, the head is going to be the front office and the coaching. So let's start there. First off, what are you guys' thoughts on the job Doug Wilson did over the years? Zach, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I think, hold on. I got
to. Just going right in.
Able to actually talk here. All right, there goes my props. All right.
Okay.
I think overall you've got to look at the body of work that Doug Wilson put forward on this squad, and I think fans have to be pleased. You know, the team speed was exposed in the Cup final against Pittsburgh, and that's been well established. The challenge was addressing that. I think he did that allowing Roman Pulak to walk, getting Michael Bodker. As scary as those underlying numbers were, it did address a team speed issue. So, you know, ideally, they were hoping, some secondary scoring, which didn't come to fruition. But those moves you have to take a look at and say, well, you know, he took a team that went to the Stanley Cup final, tinkered with it, addressed some issues. And so I think overall you've got to look at what he did going into the season and say, the GM did his job.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with any of that. Look, when the Bodker signing happened, I'm pretty sure I was, you know, here lauding it. And it's easy to look back and with hindsight and go, okay, you know, Bodker, this is a disaster signing. And it kind of is. But, you know, I'm not going to go back and say, you know, he did the worst job ever. I think he, you know, I felt that this team on paper was better than it was last year. And, you know, so as much as things didn't pan out, and I don't think that, that doesn't make me happy that things didn't pan out. I can't really turn around now and say this was terrible when, you know, he did everything. I didn't like the Hansen trade, but, other than that, I can't get mad because it's all in hindsight. So I don't want to really say he did a terrible job because at the time that some of the moves were made, I was fine with them. I liked the Schlemko signing. I liked the Bodker signing at the time. It didn't work out, but you know, here we are. Hockey Jerk.
You know what? I have no complaints about the job that Doug Wilson did this year. You know, team speed, like Zach said, was an issue. He brings in Mikhail Bodker. The secondary scoring obviously didn't come to fruition, but you know what? He at times helped create some mismatches for a lot of other teams who weren't or who didn't have as much depth in their lineup. And then you look at the signing of David Schlemko, you know, it makes your third pair a little more mobile and it gives you another option for your second power play unit. Again, you know, something that didn't really work out as much as we all would hope, but at the same time, you know, he brought in, I guess you would say, the right pieces. You know, it's all about moving your feet and foot speed and, you know, creating chances. And I feel like those two guys did. Obviously, getting Brent Burns locked up to an extension as soon as possible was a do or die thing for him. I think if he doesn't get Brent Burns signed, I think that's the end of everything. Because as we saw this year, the offense runs right through him. And, you know, even the Hansen trade, I mean, obviously Yannick Hansen wasn't, you know, he wasn't a Radim Verbata or a Thomas Vanek or a insert scoring winger here, but
Patrick Eaves. Thought he
was Patrick Eaves. There you go. But I thought he was, you know, a piece that helped out and kind of, you know, like Bodker, contributed to the creating of mismatches against teams that don't have as much depth. And I mean, you know, the three of us all following the Barracuda very closely, obviously salty about losing Goldobin, but at the same time, at the end of the day, I don't think the loss of Goldobin was as big a deal as it was perceived to be at the time.
I just think, like, the only issue, like, I have with the Hansen trade, not even just Goldobin, but I mean, this is a guy who, when the game was on the line, was sitting on the bench.
Right.
Like, you know, we're sending, and we'll get to this later, but you're sending guys on one leg and half a face and out there to play. And you know, you have Yannick Hansen sitting on the bench. And I like Yannick Hansen as a player. I don't know. Again, that's more, you know, that's more hindsight for me. I didn't like the trade when it happened. I'm still not a fan of it now.
The Hansen trade, you know, it was risky. And I think trying to bring in Yannick Hansen when you're already struggling to integrate Michael Bodker, you know, he never was going to bring a lot of offense. You know, he could certainly chip in. He could be part of that secondary scoring. But that wasn't what the Sharks needed at the time. So, right. So if I do have, you know, one critique, you know, and Goldobin is as polarizing a prospect as we probably in recent memory for the San Jose Sharks.
I don't think we've ever had a more polarizing prospect.
Yeah. I mean, he would be top three in Sharks history, I think. That would agreed, you know, could easily be number one. But however you view that, you give up a fourth round pick and a boomer bust prospect. I think that's a fair assessment. Yep. For really a second, third liner that isn't a difference maker. And we have to remember that if the Sharks had won the Stanley Cup, you know, they would have traded a first. But at that point, everything's moot. They've been the one team out of 29 out of 30 that actually got the job done. So at that point, you'd give up an entire draft class for a Stanley Cup. But that might be my one critique, but even that's lukewarm because I thought Hansen played his role well. I'm just not sure that's another
needed.
Right, another depth forward is what the Sharks needed, exactly.
You know, actually, it's funny, though, because in the chat here, and it kind of just reminded me, something that I wasn't too happy about with Doug Wilson this year is kind of how now – you know, how he kind of mishandled some assets. I find it hard to believe you couldn't get anything, a draft pick, something from Matt Nieto when he went, you know, first waiver claim. I don't mind the Wingles trade so much because of the Barracuda on the Barracuda side. But again, I think that was another, you know, asset that we held on to way too long. So I think that the holding on to assets too long until they're, you know, their value is completely diminished, I think is something that soured me a little on Doug Wilson this year.
I can certainly see that. And I think at the end of the day, those are fringe players though. You know, if Matt Nieto had been able to come in, do the job that the Sharks had envisioned for him, we might not have had to bring up Timo Meier, you know, so early in his career. And the Sharks, certainly, I think with Kevin LeBanc, they found that he has what it takes at this level. Timo, you know, we've talked about it at length. He's got all the check boxes for a future NHLer. He probably could have utilized a full year of seasoning in a better deployment, I think. Mm-hmm. But so Nieto, I'm kind of wishy-washy on where I would have put that. Wingles, I agree with. That's a player that really you need to be getting a mid-round pick. Maybe not this year, but, you know, a 2018. That could be – I think that's a valid critique.
Jerk, any thoughts on the Nieto-Wingles handling?
Yeah, I mean, the Wingles trade, I thought it needed to happen. You know, it was just too much salary for a guy who – barely could crack the lineup. And
right.
I do agree, though. I think that Doug Wilson held on to both of them too long. And I mean, we can't really be surprised. This isn't the first time it's happened. I mean, we saw a similar thing with, you know, a TJ Gagliardi comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where you kind of hope the player projects somewhere and then, you know, there's a flash and it doesn't really go anywhere. I mean, but the two seasons before the Sharks went to the Cup final, Wingles had back-to-back 15-goal years. I mean, right there, it should have been like, hey, we have this depth guy that we're not going to have room for eventually. What do you want for him? And with Nieto, I mean, I've never, besides his foot speed, I was never really impressed with him from his first season in Teal. So, I mean, you lose a guy on waivers who was the first, got claimed by the first team. It sucks, obviously, but at the same time, I'm not really as upset to see him go.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, like, I'm not a huge Nieto guy either. It was just more of a situation of asset management, which
right.
I thought was kind of poor. So let's leave. We got let's get off poor Doug Wilson's back now, and let's talk coaching staff. Jerka, why don't you start with the coaching staff? What are your thoughts on Peter DeBoer and, by extension, his staff after this season?
You know, we've seen in years past, especially Peter DeBoer with the Panthers and with the Devils, you know, he has an awful trend of doing really well that his first year, and then the following years he's just no better than anybody else. And you could argue that we've seen the same thing with the Sharks, but I don't hate the job that Peter DeBoer did, you know, with the exception of playing Michael Haley in times where you could argue that he shouldn't have been played. I thought he played the guys who needed to be played, and I really like that he's not afraid to scratch guys who aren't doing so well. I mean, no knock to Todd McClellan, but we've seen guys under his regime go through awful cold spells, and mm-hmm. he keeps them playing while DeBoer says, look, if you're not going to help me out here, then I'm not going to help you out. And I really like that aspect of him. I really don't have any complaints about Peter DeBoer other than I felt there were times where a line would get a lot of chemistry, you know, especially the captain's line or, you know, Couture, Marleau, and Bodker. And then on a whim, he would break them up for insert reason here, which kind of bothered me. And as for his staff, I mean, yes, the power play was atrocious this year, and Steve Spott is the one who works on the power play, but, you know, it's not one guy. I have to think that Peter DeBoer is in Steve Spott's ear, even just a little bit about the power play. It's a group effort. It's not just one guy. And I think Steve Spott gets an unfair amount of criticism shoveled on him. And Johan Hedberg, goalie coach, I've liked what I've seen from him, and Nabokov as well. I mean, we've seen how well Jones has played, and Aaron Dell was a virtual unknown a year and a half ago. And I think he's a solid backup, and I'm excited to see what he can do with more starts, should he get them.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of those points that Jerk made, and at the locker cleanout, that was one thing that was probably as hot as I saw DeBoer get is when they were talking, when the reporters were firing the questions and the power play came up, the coaching staffs by virtue of that Steve Spott. DeBoer came out and just said, you know what? That's on all of us. You know, we all sit down as a unit. Just because he's the one tasked with kind of managing it, you know, DeBoer jumped right on that grenade and said, ultimately, it falls to me. All the decisions right. are up to me. You know, the assistant coaches more or less do what I say, you know, is kind of reading between the lines there. And so kudos to him for kind of protecting his staff, right? You know, the buck does end with Peter DeBoer, and he reminded everyone of that in no uncertain terms. That said, the one critique that I have is I would have liked to see the defense once again better utilizing Dylan DeMello and the pieces they've got, getting familiar with each other. So if the strategy had to change, it wasn't all of a sudden somebody looking over and like, I've never skated backwards with you over there in my life. That's a concern. Dylan DeMello is an NHL player. I think he could have been helpful. Where he would have slotted in, we could argue about that and discuss it with, you know, Braun and Vlasic having an up and down series. Obviously, you don't take out Mark Edward Vlasic, but you know, maybe for Brendan Dillon getting just another puck mover back there, you know, just something where it's better, you know, utilizing the pieces that you've got. You know, we didn't really see the line blender up and, you know, until late, until really their hand was forced with the injuries. But you've got to be able to switch strategies around. And I felt like DeBoer, he gets married to his defensive pairings for sure. Mm-hmm. Really with the forwards, he'll kind of marry a winger and a center. And I don't disagree with that nearly as much because you can shuffle the other pieces. Most of the Sharks are centers anyway, so they can play anywhere. But that was one thing that I would have liked to see, in addition to more starts for Arundel. He's an NHL caliber backup for sure. There were times where the workload looked to be getting to Jones. And when you've got a backup that is dependable and capable like that, there's just no reason not, you know, or there's no reason to run your starting goaltender into the ground.
Yeah, for me, I got kind of hot with DeBoer a little bit. I think my frustration with Peter DeBoer just comes from stubbornness. You know, like the power play obviously was a huge example. Look, everyone figured out Brent Burns. Everyone knew what was going to happen. Brent Burns was going to get the puck at the point, and everyone started blocking all of his shots. I mean, it's no secret Brent Burns went cold at the end of the season. And there was just a refusal to adapt to that. Like, everyone kind of had the Sharks power play kind of pegged. And it's not just all, I'm not just going to blame Brent Burns specifically. Obviously, you know, Thornton kind of lost a step this year, and I think that hurt the power play. But some of these, you know, but there was just situations where, you know, things were just clearly not working, and there was just no desire, it felt like, to deviate from it. And that, for me, was very frustrating to watch. Arundel, yeah, Arundel is another guy where obviously he should have gotten more starts. You know, he's a good goalie, and Martin Jones just got too many starts. And, you know, I don't think, you know, Martin Jones didn't have a great year, but it wasn't a terrible year. And I just think that if he had, you know, maybe a little less work, then, you know, maybe that would be better for Martin Jones, because I think there was times where he did just look just discombobulated and tired. So that's kind of my beef with Peter DeBoer right now. I don't think, like, I mean, all this talk about firing Peter DeBoer is silly. Like, he's not going to get fired. But I mean, next season I would hope to see, you know, a little more flexibility when something's clearly not working, instead of trying to jam the square peg in the round hole.
One thing to remember, though, and I think this is a good reminder for everyone, is just how little time NHL teams have to practice. Right. So if you are going to make wholesale changes and you've had a system that's installed for, say, 18 months, that is difficult to really, you know, throw out the entire power play and say, you know what, we're trying something completely different. So it's just a point. You know, I think that, you know, we're kind of taking different angles on the same idea of flexibility and versatility. But at the same time, there's got to be a little bit of give. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they're not going to get 5 days of practice like the Barracuda. They're not going to have time. Whatever is installed in the system organizationally, you know, pretty much at the start of the season, that's kind of where that ship's got to sail.
Right. And just like in the chat here, like, I don't think in a different market Peter DeBoer would be fired this year. He's just coming off a cup final year. He wouldn't be fired in any market, period. If I think in maybe another market, if the Sharks just stumble out of the gate next year, I think in some markets he might be on some pretty thin ice, maybe even in this one, but I'm not sold on that, especially with the injuries in the playoffs. All right. Well, we've cut open the head, and we have brains everywhere. let's move down, start opening things up in the chest. Let's go to the heart. Let's talk about Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, which this should be fun. I mean, injured, the Walking Dead, basically, is what I'm going to call them now. You know, Marleau had a broken thumb. Joe Thornton didn't even have a leg, apparently. You know, it was just kind of like there. You know, obviously, these guys are both pending UFAs. A lot of conversation on, you know, do you not sign them? Do you sign them? Blah. I don't know. Zach, where are you on Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton?
So there's no denying that they are the face of this franchise. They've been intertwined ever since they both entered the league in 1997 as pick number one and pick number two, and then were reunited by the hockey gods. You know, to call these players, you know, intertwined is an understatement. And now both of them testing free agency waters potentially for the first time, even more so. Thornton's injury is scary at his age. He was yeah. never a blazing fast skater. He had lost a step, and now you're going to add major reconstructive knee surgery on a 38-year-old body that has seen a couple things. And I think that has to be concerning. For the Sharks specifically, I think that, and this sounds terribly insensitive, I think it's a good thing. their team doctors are, you know, were the ones that did the surgery yesterday. They described it as successful. They said that he was going to be ready for the season. I find that hard to believe, but that's the word. If Thornton is going out on the open market and there's 30 other teams looking at him, it's obviously no secret that he's had major knee surgery. Does that scare away some suitors? Does that drive his price maybe a little bit lower? Maybe it's a 1 year show me, or maybe it's a limited 2 year with performance bonuses. Who knows? It opens up, I think, a whole new world contractually when you take into account his age, his contract status, where he's at. Joe Thornton's not going to go play in Las Vegas.
No.
You know, he's looking for kind of the feeling I get when talking to Joe Thornton, and he said it, he understands that this is a team that is going to have a chance next year. They had a chance this year. It didn't work out. Really due to, you know, injuries. A healthy Joe Thornton and a healthy Logan Couture completely changed the complexion of the playoffs. That said, it's going to be a big question mark on what his contract looks like. And with looking at the Sharks' salary cap, you know, probably staying flat league-wide, unless the NHLPA hits the escalator, it's going to be tough to fit all that in there.
Yeah, oh, I agree. Jerk, what's your take on Thornton and Marleau?
You know what? A part of me kind of wants the team to move on from them just to, you know, like, you know, we've had conversation before, just pull off the Band-Aid and just get the retool, reset, reconfigure, whatever you want to call it. Just get the wheels turning on it as soon as possible to eliminate some future heartache. But, I mean, at the same time, yes, they're both 38 years old, but they can – this year, I feel they were effective, especially Patrick Marleau. And I don't think that the price tag of this year should be what holds people back from wanting them to come back, because there's nothing saying that Thornton and Marleau won't be like, yeah, we like it here. You know, we want a good – we know we have a good team. We will do whatever it takes to stay. There's nowhere is it written that – is said that they won't do that and you have to give them $7 million. I think Marleau is still an asset. He still has incredible speed for his age, and he still has one of the best wrist shots in the league. And I've noticed too, in the last two or so years, he started to use his body more, which you could argue does wear him down physically. But at the same time, the physicality is something that I've wanted to see from Marleau for a long time. And so I think in that respect, he's still an asset for us. As for Joe Thornton, like Zach said, you know, you're having major reconstructive knee surgery at age 38.
Yeah.
You're looking at a minimum of 6 months because, you know, there's all kinds of recovery times, you know, a lot of rest comes into it, but then you have to consider physical therapy. You have to consider the possibility of a setback. You know, let's say Joe Thornton thinks he's ready, you know, puts on the skates, does one push off and something happens with his knee and he's out for X amount of months, even more. I think this injury is going to cause a lot more long-term issues than we all anticipate. I will be surprised if he's ready to go on opening night. So by that respect, I agree with Zach. I think a lesser AAV would be due for him just because of the uncertainty and maybe more than 1 year, but even then the dollars would seriously have to be low for anybody to consider more than 1 year.
Yeah. And with Marlowe, I think that's a really good point. He's got a lot, I think, left in the tank. At clean out day, he said he thought he had 5 good years left in him. And I think Patrick Marlowe is still one of the fastest players in the NHL, period. Age or no age. He's got wheels. And when Patrick Marlowe loses a step, then he's just a really fast player. You know, I don't think Patrick Marlowe is going to go from, you know, one of the fastest players in the league to Joe Thornton's speed this summer. I just don't see it. And then on a team already starved for goals, I feel like Marlowe actually is a player that they really need to be focusing on. You know, both of those guys, to be honest, and I wrote about this today at the Hockey Writers, I feel like both of those guys, a 2-year deal at far less than what they're making at nearly $7 million each, probably in the high fives to six range, I think that's fair. I think that's what the market value is going to be. If Michael Bodker gets you, $4 million, I would have absolutely no problem at Joe Thornton and Patrick Marlowe at 5.9 each.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, that was kind of the thing that I've been, you know, there's been a lot of chat, obviously, about what these guys' value is going to be going on. And, you know, they're not making less than Mikhail Bodker. There's just no way that these guys are going to come back for less money than Mikhail Bodker is making, whether he's here or not. And that's, you know, that's a completely other topic. Initially, when the Sharks went out, which you have to always remember is in the moment. Sometimes I don't always think clearly because you're talking in the moment. And so I know this might seem a little backsteppy a little bit, but with the benefit of, you know, you go on to After Dark and you talk in the moment, and you don't always have time to really reflect on things. Now, at the time, I said, yeah, pull the Band-Aid off. You know, I want to see what Pavelski is without Joe Thornton before he gets another deal, which is he has, what, 2 seasons left now. There are 3 seasons left now, and that's still a concern of mine, obviously. And obviously you have to re-up Vlasic and everything else. The problem is this is a team that can't afford to step back because you have no draft picks. I mean, okay, you have draft picks this year. You have a first, a fifth, 2 sixths, and 3 sevenths, which means we'll get 3 Joe Pavelskis for sure. But
hopefully a Dylan DeMello in there too.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you have no draft picks this year, so it's not like, and then next year you're still missing a second and a third in what should be a pretty decent draft class. Now you can re-get picks, but here's the problem, right? Is you kind of have to bring them back, and even bringing them back, maybe you're in purgatory. Maybe you're, you know, maybe you kind of slide into this, you know, maybe we make it. Maybe we're a 1-2 and done team. We don't know, but I mean that's a possibility. Or you step back with no draft picks, no picks to offer sheet anybody, no decent free agents to really sign and bring in. I mean, I don't know what else you're supposed to do. There's, you know, as much as Joe Thornton and Patrick Marlowe may not be everyone's favorite players right now, and especially with Thornton with his injury, but is there anyone else? Like, there's no one to replace them. And without having the picks to start really turning things around, because I don't think you want to do a whole, you know, you didn't sign Brent Burns to an 8-year deal at $8 million to completely tear it down to the bolts.
Right.
So that's not, you know, you can't just trade everything not nailed down. And, you know, that would just be stupid because you still have, you know, do you really want to trade a Logan Couture at this point? No. You know, do you want to let Vlasic walk? No. Like, there's, you know, I mean, like, I know there's been lots of talks of, you know, of just stripping it down because other teams have had success doing that. But for every team that's had success stripping it down, there's been two or three that have just been perennial losers.
Right. And that's a great point. And everyone will point to the Edmonton Oilers with all their first round draft picks. They were one ping pong ball away from not having Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
So even pointing to the Oilers, that was Powerball. I mean, that's what returned them to contention. I mean, Leon Draisaitl is an excellent player, elite player.
Yeah.
He's not Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid opens up a ton of ice for the entire rest of that roster. And without him, they're fringe playoff, maybe, with the other moves, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too, is, you know, since the Sharks have lost, you know, we've seen tear it down, start over, they can't win anything. We've seen all of those. And you know what? If the Sharks were a team like Edmonton, who had nothing, or a team like Buffalo or Toronto, who had nothing, then I would say, yeah, go for it. But this team has good pieces. They have a legitimate starting goalie in his mid-20s. They have a franchise defenseman who just turned 32. They have Logan Couture, who in my eyes, again, unpopular opinion, is a number one center. They have Joe Pavelski, who is not the same player away from Joe Thornton, but is still a damn good player. With those pieces in play, you don't just tear it down.
Right.
It's asinine, and it's an unnecessary step back. And I used the word earlier, you retool. You have to make the pieces around them better. You can't place blame on the only guys who do anything to help your team out.
Okay, I'm in the chat, and my nose is kind of freaking out. Look, people are tired of seeing the Sharks not win, but you know what? If they tear it down to the bolts and with no guarantee, look at Doug Wilson has, like, going back to Doug Wilson, something Doug Wilson has is a spotty as hell draft record. Incredibly spotty. You want Doug Wilson to be the guy who makes all the picks to bring the Sharks back to prominence? He's not going anywhere. Like, drafting is, you know, I mean, the Sharks have done okay at the draft, but they've definitely, you know, there's definitely been some, you know, there's been, I would say Doug Wilson has done all right, but he's not, I don't think drafting is his strongest suit.
Well, you know, he's also had just only not even a handful of top picks. And if you look at, you know, NHL certainty, as soon as you get out of that top three, it gets murky. And to be able to find a Devin Setoguchi, who he flipped for Brent Burns, and at that point I thought that was trading at the high point on Setoguchi. Pavelski, is a better player with Joe Thornton, but I also think that Logan Couture is a better player with Joe Thornton ahead of him. Right. I think Jerk might be right that he's a one center. I'd be happy to never find out because I think as a two center, Logan Couture, I already think he's the best Shark on the roster. And as a two center with his skill set, he is positively deadly. So insulating him a little bit and allowing him to roll out there against the other team's top line, I think long term, that's going to be a strength for the Shark. Logan Couture was a seventh or ninth overall?
Ninth.
Thank you. You know, so still a top 10. But with what folks are talking about, the 2019 draft looks good. The 2018 draft looks stupendous.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to tear down, if you're going to fully enact a Shanna plan, it's got to be right now. You would have to ditch Logan Couture. You would have to ditch Marc-Edouard Vlasic.
Yep.
Joe Pavelski.
Yep.
You would want
Martin
to.
Jones even.
Martin Jones. Vlasic's gone. Burns has to be. I mean, to truly get in there, into those top picks where you're going to get a difference maker at, you know, at least a top five. And then now the NHL has the lottery. you could finish dead last. Vegas is going to be in there, and you could be picking fourth.
Yep.
Then what?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you gotta, it's not time. Like, you're stuck. If you're gonna tear it down, at least have some draft picks. Sharks don't have any for the next 2 years. Like, they have picks, but not great picks. You might as well just ride that out.
Yeah, they don't have their second or third next year either.
Right. Exactly. So, like, that's my point. Like,
but obviously, moving those players, you're gonna replenish quite a bit there.
Oh, for sure. You could, absolutely. I'd rather have my picks and then build off of that.
Right. No, exactly. And so if you already don't have your second and third, that's dangerous. I mean, that is very dangerous game.
Third, like, the Sharks don't need their third, let's be honest. When have they ever done anything with a third?
Yeah, the track record in the third round is spotty.
And here's another thing too, and I no doubt will ruffle some feathers with this, but you know, this is the three of us included. As Sharks fans, we have to remember that we've been very spoiled with very good seasons. Yeah. I'm just looking at what Mike Neva said in the chat. 26 seasons, and the Sharks have made the playoffs, I believe, 19 or 20 times. Even with zero Stanley Cups, that is a damn good ratio of making the playoffs. And there have been some really good Sharks teams that ultimately just fell short due to, you know, circumstances out of their control. And I hate to say the it could be worse cliche, but that could not be further from the truth. I mean, you look at teams like Washington and St. Louis and Buffalo, teams who've been around forever and have had some solid teams, have not been able to get it done. And in those situations, you kind of have to stay the course and just hope for the best. And even a team like the Los Angeles Kings, you know, their two cup teams were really good teams, but they didn't get those good teams until year 45. Mm-hmm. It's not a race to get the first Stanley Cup. You know, it's not like, okay, it's the NHL centennial and you have zero cups, so you have to start in the lowest league. Like, it's not a race.
Back to the E with you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, 26 seasons is a very minuscule amount of time compared to, you know, the league being around for 100, and even like a team like the Montreal Canadiens being around for even longer. Like, you just have to remember that you're not going to win every year, and you just have to remember that we've been spoiled, and so we have to accept that some things are not going to go our way.
I think the thing that I said too on After Dark, and this never changed, is the one thing that I enjoy about being a Sharks fan more than anything else is that when the puck drops at the start of the year, I have hope, because this is a team that could do something. I'm not a Jets fan where maybe we make the playoffs and maybe we win a round.
Or
even worse, right? Like, I'm not a, you know, you talk about in the chat, you know, it's like, You talk about teams like, yeah, Carolina has a cup. Does anyone really want to be a damn Hurricanes fan right now? They've been putrid before and after. Like, great. One season you win a cup. But you know what? I guarantee you, after that little glow of winning a cup wears off and you stuck losing for 10, 15 years, the cup's not going to matter much anymore after that.
So bringing this back around, and this will be a question for both you gentlemen.
Okay.
For the heart of the San Jose Sharks, Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton, do they have to be here for the Sharks to contend next year? Ooh.
I don't think it would hurt. this year.
You think they're contenders without Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau?
No. But I'm not sure they're contenders with either at this point because of said leg injury and just because they're 38. Like, the one problem is that we're the only team in the NHL that is trying to run their offense through two, you know, veteran, like super veteran players. Everyone else is a lot younger.
Okay. Sure.
You know what? I'm probably going to catch a lot of flack for this. I thought Patrick Marleau was a huge asset this year. Scoring goals was a problem all year, and he managed to put 27 in the back of the net like that. And you look at Joe Thornton, you know, he had, I believe he had 50 points exactly. And I mean, that's a good number, but that's not the Joe Thornton that we were used to, obviously. This season is the first time since 03-04 where someone else not named Joe Thornton has led the team in assists. And I don't think the Sharks would be any better without Joe Thornton, but at the same time, I don't think they would be any worse. I think the Sharks have a handful of guys who, when Thornton wasn't playing well or when he was injured, picked up the slack. I mean, obviously, Brent Burns creates a lot of offense from the blue line. Logan Couture consistently puts up 50 to 60 point years. Joe Pavelski is still good for 50 points. And there's a lot of emerging players from the Barracuda and other places that could pick up the slack in my eyes. And the emergence of Thomas Hertl at center, too, I think helps that argument.
All right.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I like, for me, I just think that, you know, when I just to wrap up on these two, like, I'm not sure if bringing them back isn't just spinning our tires, because I know we're all talking about the injuries, and obviously the injuries in the playoffs were significant, but everyone was healthy when this team coughed up a 9-point division lead. So, I mean, there's still skepticism with me for that. As far as, you know, can with the veteran players, can we make it through an 82 game season, let alone, you know, push through the playoffs again. Also, keep Patrick Marleau in a contract year and you'll be fine. Let's move on to the lungs. The forward group, obviously, you know, the lungs look a little undeveloped here, guys. They didn't get much from them. Is there enough lung here to be successful, or was it just a bad, just weird circumstance where everyone kind of went cold? And I think, you know, here, I think in this situation, I think injury does play a factor. You know, Jonas Donskoy separated his shoulder 18 times or something during the regular season. That doesn't help. Twice during regular season. I can save this for later. All right. What do you guys think? Jerk, what do you guys think of the forward core, minus Thornton and Marleau, obviously?
I mean, you know, I said it earlier, and I said it on the most recent episode of The Pucknologist, too. You know, you have your big guys who are not Thornton and Marleau. Like I said, Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, Brent Burns. And obviously, they're going to put up decent seasons every year. That's a given. But you also have a lot of solid pieces, you know, who saw limited time in the NHL this year or who saw no time at all. I mean, Marcus Sorensen, we've gone on and on about. His speed is a huge asset. I think if he takes the right steps, he can contribute in some capacity. Same thing with Kevin LeBanc. I mean, he's only 2 years removed from leading the whole OHL in goals. That's not something that happens by accident. And, you know, Timo Meier, obviously a highly touted pick from his draft, you know, a good blend of offense and physicality and skating. And I think with him, he's probably going to need a little more work, but that's not to say that he can't be an elite level player. And then, you know, you look at a guy like Danny O'Regan, who had, I believe, 57 points in the AHL last year or this year. Granted, it's 58. It's the AHL, so obviously not the NHL. That's a given. But if he was able to put up, you know, two-thirds of that or half of that at the NHL level, I think that would consider him to be a solid player. And there's nothing saying that he can't get better. I mean, he's – help me out here, Zach. How old is he? 21, 22?
I think he's just turned 22, if I'm doing my math right. He's a 94.
Exactly, which – he's still very young, and at 22, there's still a lot of room to grow. So I don't think that, you know, with no Thornton, no Marleau, this team is just dead. I think their forward core needs some work. There are some aspects of it that are very young and very inexperienced, but That's why this time is so crucial. This is the time to give those guys a chance and see if they have what it takes to make this team.
Cheryl helping us out in the chat. O'Regan's 23. There's a reason I write and not, don't do math.
Right. You know, and Gen X makes a good point. I mean, obviously junior hockey and even the HL is riddled with guys who own, you know, and then don't translate. Obviously, no one's expecting Danny O'Regan to translate point to point to the NHL, but there's definitely something there. You know, I think this is kind of where the Sharks, I think, paid a little bit for, you know, again, they went on their big run and they paid for it. You know, Joel Wirth still being around hurts at this point. You know, he was good, but I mean, I thought Joel Wirth definitely lost a step this year. And I think that, you know, that's problematic. Bodker, we already went over, you know, Bodker definitely didn't pan out. Donskoy being, you know, can't do much in hockey with a separated shoulder and coming back and, you know, even coming back, if that shoulder is not completely healed, you're going to be half the player you are. We've seen what Jonas Donskoy can be, but with one arm, I mean, I don't think anyone's a particularly great player. I mean, there's just, you know, I thought Logan Couture was fine, even despite, you know, Logan Couture obviously missed some time. Thomas Hertl missed some time. Hertl, obviously, injuries are a concern at this point, and that's frustrating for sure. But I still liked what I saw from Hertl this year. I think that, you know, now people are going to be like, oh, where are all the points? But, you know, to me, he's a guy that does everything. He did everything but score. If he can start, you know, finding a way to score from center, then he's going to be set. Like, I know that a lot of people really like him up with the Joes, but long term, that's not going to be an option. And then what do you want to do? You want to pay him for a good year with Joe Thornton and then pay him stupid money and then lose Joe Thornton and then find out that Thomas Hertl can't do anything without him? Like, I don't want that. I would rather slog through this center ice thing. You know, and then other than that, I mean, you know, Kevin LeBanc came up. He was really good for a while. But towards the end of the season, I thought Timo was good, especially in the playoffs. But I mean, he definitely played in the NHL probably much longer than he should have early on. But, you know, again, Sorensen, I liked what I saw from Sorensen, and we'll see. I mean, as far as that goes, you know, Pavelski's still Joe Pavelski. You know, the tools are there. It's just a combination of players that don't fit or too many of the same type of player. Zach, what do you think?
So just running through this, obviously, Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski are your top flight stars on the forward group down, you know, in the lungs, as we're calling it.
Yes.
I think Tomáš Hertl, I'm still not sold on him as a center. I feel like he's more dangerous as a wing, but that argument, it might be moot. They might just have to have him at center just because of body count. And that could solve that. It was interesting at the media day, DeBoer gave the comparison, and I don't think it's a fair one, is with Jonas Donskoy. And he said, you know, is Sorensen a Donskoy, where we liked what we saw last year and takes a step back? I mean, mm-hmm. Donskoy had two separated shoulders this season. That, to me, that might be the only forward that I give a pass to, mm-hmm. you know, just a do-over. Two separated shoulders, that's huge. We saw Joe Thornton get out there and at least be effective on half a leg. He already only had one leg. Then he broke, you know, half of that one. So, you know, without a shoulder, that's brutal. And so for me, I think Donskoy gets a pass. Carlson, super hard worker. I don't know about his offensive ceiling being much higher, but is he a 20 to 30 point guy that gives you an honest effort, you know, game in and game out, and is a bit of a Swiss Army knife? Sure. Chris Tierney, I'm not a huge fan of, and that was a player DeBoer called out. He's flat out said, Chris Tierney's not a young player anymore. He needs to take a step forward.
Right.
You know, and I agree with that assessment. Chris Tierney, you know, yes, he's only 22. Okay, great. He's also been in the NHL for two full years. Is he turning into a Tommy Wingles, Matt Nieto? That's a legitimate question at this point. He's got the smarts and the speed, but if he doesn't have that skill to be anything more than a 3-4, mm-hmm. you know, centerman, the Sharks, I mean, that's easily replaceable. That's not an asset that you need to protect in an expansion draft or, nope. you know, waste a ton of money on or go to the wall to protect in trade talks. My stance on Joel Ward is well established. The Sharks are straddled with that contract at, you know, for another season at $3.275 million. If by some miracle the hockey gods descended from on high and mm-hmm. came to San Jose and evaporated that contract, I think that's huge. I saw Joel Ward as a player that was not real engaged. He was cheating a lot. I didn't like any part of his game whatsoever this season. Bodker, that's a whole show on its own. You know, at $4 million and, you know, what was it, 26 points, 10 goals, 16 assists, twice when he was a healthy scratch to try to send a message, that's just not going to cut it. You know, the flip side of that is I feel like at least with Bodker, he has some ability on the penalty kill. He's got speed. I like what he brings for a relatively similar dollar amount to Joel Ward. I feel like Joel Ward has to be – everything has to be explored with him. He has a modified no-trade clause. He can according to Cap Friendly, he has a 6-team no-trade list. The other 25 teams with Vegas now a destination need to get a phone call. Yep. Doug Wilson is infamous for calling everybody and talking to everybody. Joel Ward's name has to come up, as well as probably Bodker. You know, he at least has to test the water on what's going on with Bodker. Hansen at $2 million, you know, I'll take that. That is a depth player. That is somebody in your bottom nine that's versatile. The only UFA among the forward groups besides Thornton and Patrick Marleau is Michael Haley. I know there's been more ink spilled on Haley than any fourth liner in the history of the San Jose Sharks. But I feel like Michael Haley, it's, you know, $625,000. He did his job damn well. And if he came back and was, you know, if Peter DeBoer feels like he needs to have a middleweight in that lineup, at least Haley can play hockey. You know, for 9 minutes a night and not completely doom you defensively at $625,000 to be a 13th forward, fine.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, like Haley, if he comes back, he comes back. If he doesn't, they'll find someone else to plug in that spot. It's not the end of the world. I think
Michael Haley has actually a tougher skill set to replace. So you need a middleweight, somebody that can drop the glove, somebody that can send a message. He's got to at least be, you know, a plus skater. And I think Michael Haley skates well. And he's got to be defensively responsible and be willing to accept league minimum while still being defensively responsible. That's a lot of checkboxes to find, you know, loafing around at league minimum.
Matt, you know, Timo replaces, except for Timo doesn't fight.
He's got some sandpaper, but he's not a middleweight. Not even close.
Yeah. Timo really doesn't. I mean, he can fight. He has fought before, but he's not a guy who's regularly going to drop the gloves. And
he fought in the queue.
Really want to drop the gloves.
He fought in the queue.
Right. Yeah,
I want to point out too is, you know, Chris Edwards saying that DeSimone is 22 and we're excited about him, but we're not excited about Chris Tierney. I believe he's talking about Chris Tierney, who's also a 22-year-old center. The key difference here is DeSimone is a defenseman who's relatively new to the organization. With Chris Tierney, we kind of know what we have. And I thought from the start that Ryan Carpenter would take over Chris Tierney's spot in the lineup. And to this day, I still think either a Ryan Carpenter or Danny O'Regan could easily step into Chris Tierney's spot with no drop off whatsoever.
Yeah, I will concede the point that I was actually pretty impressed during the playoffs with Tierney when he actually had decent line mates too.
Oh, agreed. And so was I. You know, I believe half of his goals this year were in the month of March and April in the regular season. Yeah. So that's enough to be impressed with. I would like more consistency. Like,
right.
If he is, and you know, that goes back to DeBoer. I mean, if he's going to play well with good line mates, put him with good line mates, but
what good line mates do you surround him with when you've got Joel Ward, Mikael Bodker, Yannick Hansen? I mean, that's really what's fleshing out your middle six. Yeah, well, no, probably bottom six.
Bottom six at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions for sure.
And regarding Chris Tierney, he has a body of work of over 200 NHL games in the regular season and 30 in the postseason. Yeah. I mean, he's a decent player. I'm not saying that, you know, he should be playing in the Southern, you know, Professional Hockey League with the Knoxville Ice Bears. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, he's a bona fide NHLer. It's just, is there enough room for him in this roster with all these other question marks laying around and young players that are knocking on the door? I feel like he's expendable. I feel that he has a replaceable skill set, but he's going to have no problem
finding another job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the defense. We're on the torso now. Obviously, you know, Burns got cold in the end, and I don't know if it's so much that he got cold or, like I said earlier, everyone kind of just wisened up to the plan and countered it properly. You know, obviously Vlasic, Braun had an up and down year. Vlasic especially too. I was surprised when Vlasic said that he was healthy and he's heading to the World Championships, to be completely honest. Zach, I guess start us off on the defense.
So I do subscribe to the theory that Burns just really went ice cold. There's been a book on Brent Burns. There's been a book for the last 2.5-3 years on what you have to do to try to slow him down, and teams just couldn't. So much of this game is confidence, and to me, he was a player that was just gripping his stick and it was turning to sawdust because so much of the offense did come through him, and that's a discussion, and we're having it. Yeah. And that comes to, you know, deployment, that comes to strategy, that comes to the power play, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's what happens when you have a singular focal point in your offense, and it happens to also be the focal point of your defensive strategy in the offensive zone. It's just too easy for me to jump on this and say, well, Burns should have, you know, adjusted to this and that. To me it looked like a player that had just lost his mojo, and it, you know, at media day he frankly sounded despondent. I don't know if anyone saw, you know, any of the video that came out of there. I just had my iPhone, but he just had the look of a guy that was tired of answering the same questions the same ways, and there were just so many long pauses and I don't knows and ums. You know, flip side of that is it's easy to give an interview and everything's going right.
Yeah.
You know, Burns is about to be the highest paid San Jose Sharks player in its history. You're going to have to get used to reporters putting a microphone in your face when it's not going good and saying, what's going on out there? That comes with the territory. You sign that deal, it's more than just the check. There's a lot more that comes with that.
Something to jump on what you were talking about too, Zach. It's a very, you know, very small, very stupid thing, but it's still something that stands out is, you know, when we've seen one of the members of the team who wears a letter on their jersey out of the lineup, it's been Marlowe or it's been Vlasic who usually picks up those reins. But towards the end of the regular season and in the playoffs, we saw Brent Burns with a letter on his jersey when Joe Thornton was out. So, you know, myself personally, I've never subscribed to the idea that Brent Burns should wear a letter, as dumb of a concept I think it is. They're very clearly, and like you said, with the contract, they're clearly giving him some more responsibility and some more, I guess, leadership, if you will. And so to what you said, Zach, you know, if whether you're on a 10-game win streak or a 10-game losing streak, you have to be able to go in front of the cameras and say, this is what we're doing wrong. This is how we need to fix it. This is what we're doing right. You know, this is what's going on. You can't just say, you know, I don't know, we'll figure it out, you know, or you got to have answers.
Yeah. And I think Vlasic, you know, to his credit, he does have that, and you do see it. He'll get out there, and that's the guy that's staring down the other team's top lines.
Yep.
You know, I went back and forth on this with Chris Edwards on Twitter. Realistically, the pairing of Vlasic and Braun, their possession numbers, took a step back this season. And there's a lot that goes into that. He was arguing more for 5-on-5 goal differential, which I kind of equate to fancy stat version of plus minus. When you have Vlasic and Braun able to provide the defense that they did last year and be positive possession players in Corsi, meaning you're getting more shot attempts when they're on the ice than you are giving up, that's key. And I think that's an under-realized angle of this season. You had both Vlasic and Braun struggling, giving up more shots and not helping create as much. And whatever went into that, whether it's defensive play, you know, fell off, which I think we saw a bit of, you know, the forwards not helping them out as much. You know, there's so much that goes into that. But defense is a five-man unit. And that's the point where I think that you look at Vlasic and Braun, those two get the defensive zone starts. They do all the heavy lifting. They carry a lot of water for the San Jose Sharks. And those are the guys that you need to, you know, flip series and flip games and flip winning and losing streaks around. They're both still obviously key players to the San Jose Sharks. Braun's an interesting one. You know, he's under contract for $3.8 million for the next 3 years. Do the Sharks do some estate planning? Do they expose Braun because they feel that his skill set is replaceable and that Mark Edward Vlasic is the obvious linchpin, right? I mean, the Sharks don't think that. Everyone knows that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just a statement of fact. So if Braun is exposed because he's a very good NHL defender and at $3.8 million coming off the books and maybe they have higher hopes for DeMello, I feel Joachim Ryan is ready for a long look. Tim Heed, if you can get him under contract, which we'll get to, but I kind of doubt. You know, the Sharks have some defensive ability coming up through the pipeline where perhaps losing Justin Braun and his salary makes a difference. And if you protect Braun, then that obviously exposes Brendan Dillon and David Schlemko. But I feel like DeMello could fill in very nicely as the right-handed shot on either of those two. So it'll be interesting. Wilson at the media day said that he already knows what he's doing as far as a 7-3 or an 8 skater protection. He wouldn't share it. When pressed, he kind of jokingly gave up that, yes, Martin Jones will be protected. So, oh. Yeah, so Aaron – yep, so he did give the media that, so everyone can rest assured that Martin Jones, breaking news, will be protected in the upcoming expansion draft. So Aaron Dell's the exposed goalie. But, you know, other than that, you know, there's some decisions to make, and they have long-term ramifications,
right? You know,
especially with the cap being flat. So what they do on defense is going to be interesting. I thought Schlemko was a good signing. You know, he had his ups and downs, but I thought overall it was a positive upgrade over Roman Polak. Brendan Dillon's a very serviceable 5-6 that adds toughness, a bit of fighting, just a good bit of sandpaper back there on a blue line that doesn't have much of it outside of him. So, you know, he's a player with a role to play. He's still young. He's 26. You know, 3.2 might be a bit high for him. but I guess at some point you have cost certainty in youth, and that does cost money in today's NHL.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the defense, obviously it starts with Vlasic and trickles its way down. And I thought Vlasic had an off year, but I don't expect that to continue. I still think that Vlasic is still one of the best defensemen in this league, period. It's not even close. You know, Brent Burns, obviously going cold was an issue, but again, I think that, you know, Brent Burns will recover and everything's going to be okay. You know, you don't want him to kind of, you know, be crushed under the weight of that contract, hopefully. But I think, you know, it's Brent Burns. He's going to be fine. Stop talking about moving into forward, or I'm going to come through a monitor and hit you in the throat. the bottom guys, I think, you know, DeMello, Dylan, Schlemko. I mean, these are all serviceable guys. I don't really have any ill will towards any of them. I thought Paul Merton kind of lost a step, and I know that some people are still very much on the, you know, that's the Burns whisper and you kind of need him for that reason. I'm not as sold on that. I still think you could find a younger upgrade there and maybe Burns could be okay. But, you know, that's obviously up for debate.
I just think it's hard to find that good of a defender.
Right.
You know, is he overpriced at 4.85 for the next two seasons? Sure. But to find that smart of a defender that's willing to deal with his partner more times than not being there for him, you know,
right.
You know, see, I do think he's a bit of the Wookiee whisperer. you know, I see that role. I at the cost, I think, is excessive, but I feel like Paul Martin is still a contributor. I feel like he's a solid player that's plugged into his role, and he just goes about doing his job.
So here's my question, though, because could you see, like, because obviously Brent Burns is going to be here for a while, 8 years. could you see someone like Joakim Ryan fitting in that Paul Martin role going at some point? Not next year, but going forward.
Ooh.
I could. And because you look at the Barracuda, all year it's been the Joakim Ryan and Tim Heed show. Mm-hmm. And Tim Heed has, I mean, no, by no stretch is Tim Heed Brent Burns. He doesn't have nearly enough facial hair or tattoos.
That's true. That's right.
But, you know, a lot of times Tim Heed, you know, he'll, especially on the power play, he'll slide off from the point, kind of down the boards, and you know he'll take a shot, and we've seen him many times on two-on-ones have no issue about just going all in and taking the shot or taking the pass. And you know what, Joakim Ryan is always right there to back him up and get back. I'm a big fan of Joakim Ryan's skating. I think he's really good with his stick as well. I could absolutely see him step into Paul Martin's role. And honestly, you know, the way the cards fall, you know, if it's DeMello or if it's Braun or Schlemko or whomever that's taken, I would have no issue with Joakim Ryan being the 6-7 defenseman either.
Yeah, I completely concur with Dr. Jerk there. Joakim Ryan just checks a lot of boxes. If he was 6'3", we'd be hearing a heck of a lot more of him, and Doug Wilson would be getting a heck of a lot more phone calls. That, you know, that said, he is a very complete two-way defender, and he's very good at the AHL level. Defensemen especially, you don't know what you got until they get some NHL seasoning, and any of them. Even you look at Brent Burns, I mean, he flip-flopped once he turned pro between forward and defense, two or three times? You know, just trying to figure out what to do with this skill set. You've got to be able to grow with the player. Very few NHL defenders are market where Vlasic playing as an 18-year-old and playing well. That is the rare exception and certainly not the rule. So I feel like the Sharks have brought Dylan DeMello along properly. They've brought him in. They've had him practice. They've got him in spot duty this year. He got leaned on a little bit more. I think very easily Dylan DeMello could step in on for whoever is lost on the Sharks roster. You might have to shuffle your pairings. Yeah. And I know that that's scary to the coaching staff, but you might have your hand forced. And then Joachim Ryan coming up and starting that Dylan DeMello apprenticeship, I would be completely comfortable with.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. That's, I think, something that that's what I would like to see. Maybe, I, you know, maybe not next season, but before this is all said and done, that's kind of where I've kind of got Joachim Ryan penciled into my lineup going forward is beside Brent Burns. Let's, you know, since we're on Joachim Ryan and stuff, let's get to the young players. So let's talk about the Kevin LeBancs, the Daniel Riegens, the Timo Meyers. Zach, why don't you start us off here with the young players? What are your thoughts on what we've seen this year, and even in the pipeline and what we've seen in the NHL?
I like them. That's all I got.
Okay.
No, I think Kevin LeBanc is going to be, he's got that ability to be a second line scoring winger. He's definitely NHL ready. Hearing about the Donskoy injury, it is completely puzzling to me why he wasn't in that discussion on a team that's already searching for goals. I thought LeBanc's off-puck play really took some big strides, and he's cooling off a little bit with the Barracuda. Some of that killer instinct isn't quite showing yet here in the playoffs quite yet, but I think he'll get going. But his off-puck play is so much better than what we were seeing in October, November, December. That's going to be a differentiator there. I think Daniel Regan's ready for a look at that fourth line. He's still waiver eligible, so he's a player that they're going to get a really long look at camp. It's time. His defensive awareness, his all-around play, it's not just the points. The points are great, but the way Daniel Riegens plays the game, sees the game, and reads the game, he's ready for an extended look. Ryan Carpenter is a UFA, and it'll be interesting to see what he does. He's a player, again, and this – I'm sorry for those of you that are regulars of the show. You hear me say it all the time. There's about to be 25 new jobs in the NHL. Ryan Carpenter is one of the best two-way players in the AHL today. It's really hard to imagine him not contending heavily for a regular NHL job next year. I think he's a player that could leave for more opportunity. Same with Tim Heed. I think Tim Heed is going to – some team that needs a puck-moving, right-handed, booming shot defenseman is just going to go to Tim Heed and say, we'll give you a two-year, $2.2 million one-way deal. And if he's their seventh defenseman, fine. If he, you know, can swim with at the NHL level, they'll obviously play him. Too many teams need that skill set of a smooth-skating, power play quarterback, right-handed shot. That just checks – way too many boxes. Every team except for the NHL Jets. The Jets have more right-handed defenders than anyone should rightfully have.
For sure. Just Cheryl in the chat. Just interesting that the CUDA extended McCarthy and not Carpenter. The thing is with that is that the Barracuda, obviously, they can sign people to just AHL-only deals, which John McCarthy is most definitely on. He's not on a two-way deal. He can't be called up to the Sharks without a contract with the Sharks. Whereas Ryan Carpenter is under contract to the San Jose Sharks, which is why you don't want the Barracuda to sign him, because then he's just under AHL contract.
Right. And Ryan Carpenter not being re-signed, remember, that's a two-way street. It takes his signature on that contract. He might look at the roster and see a Timo Meyer, a Danny O'Regan, a Kevin LeBanc, and Michael, Mikhail Bodker, Joel Ward being stuck with the Sharks, and look around and say, you know, even at Chris Tierney. Chris Tierney is in a spot that Ryan Carpenter, I think, could contribute on and possibly better. And so if I'm Ryan Carpenter, I'm looking around and saying, no, thanks. Oh, wait.
Right.
there's no reason for him to be one more log on the log jam.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, look at these guys are getting to age. Troy Grosnick, Tim Heed, Ryan Carpenter. These guys are all getting to the age now where their window to make the NHL is sliding shut. Right. And they're going to have to, what they're going to be doing is they're going to be looking for opportunities. Now, I think Tim Heed, based on his body of work in the AHL, will sign, probably get a one-way deal from a team that wants to use him next year in their regular six.
Right.
That's going to look a hell of a lot more appealing than being the Sharks' seventh D-man.
Exactly.
You know, Ryan Carpenter, same thing. Ryan Carpenter came up. I was impressed with the games Ryan Carpenter played this year. There's probably a team that, you know, might not be as deep and could use, you know, a fourth line center. Ryan Carpenter can fill that role. And if he has that chance to play in the NHL, even if it's not with the Sharks, I mean, he's going to do it, because it's getting to the point now where, again, the window's sliding shut, man. You get past 26, 27, 28, and you cross that line from, you know, prospect to journeyman very quickly. And Troy Groznik, same thing. Troy Groznik is not going to get, you know, a shot in San Jose.
Right.
He had it. He blew it last year, in my opinion. You know, he was on a one-way deal this year. I think the Sharks had him penciled in as the backup to Martin Jones. And, you know, Aaron Dell stole his job and stole his opportunity. And that's just kind of what happened. So Troy Groznik, again, yeah, you know, winning Calder Cups is nice, but playing in the NHL is better.
Yeah, you know, Carpenter, you know, he got called up for those 11 games. He had 2 goals, 2 assists. And he looked completely at home at the NHL level. And so, you know, he's got a cup of coffee. He's a known quantity at the AHL level, and plenty of teams have, you know, the professional scouts out there. I agree with you 100% on Tim Heed. When scouts have come through for Barracuda games, and I've been lucky enough to chat with them, Tim Heed's name has come up every single time, every single time. Every scout wants to just know, how's he look? How's his season been? Have you been impressed? You know, they're not listening to me. They're just trying to get as much information, you know, as possible on this player. And but that's who you can tell that they're interested in. And I agree 100% on Troy Groznik, and he's going to parlay this into contending for a backup spot somewhere else.
Yep. Other than that, I mean, other kids, look at, you know, Kevin LeBanc, pretty happy with. I thought that, yeah, he kind of cooled off at the end of the year. But look, this is a guy who I didn't even have penciled in TB to sniff the Sharks this year. So, you know, Kevin LeBanc, and, you know, for people that have listened to this show or previous shows, incarnations of this show, something I've said a lot is that this, you know, there's nothing negative about Kevin LeBanc this year. Everything's, you know, the fact that he was even there is positive. Everything's positive with Kevin LeBanc right now. Obviously, we're going to want to see him take some steps next year, but he was still, you know, but he was still good. Like, he was still way ahead of schedule, in my opinion. And, you know, so that's good. Timo Meier is a guy who also I was up and down on all year. But this year in the play, like this last playoff run, I thought he was really good. And I thought that, you know, in a time where, you know, a lot of people were talking about him replacing Michael Haley, and the playoffs was a perfect time because you don't really drop the gloves in the playoffs. So you just have a sandpaper guy that kind of runs all over the place and gets people annoyed. And I thought he was great. Like, I was super excited about Timo Meier's game. It was one of the few bright spots of the series for me. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty content with what the kids did. Daniel Regan had a couple of cups of coffee. I think Daniel Regan could easily step in and no drop off between him and Tierney. And off you go. So, it's positive. And then the Barracuda, obviously there's guys in the Barracuda that are coming along, the Yoakum Ryans, the Rourke Chartiers. You know, these guys are going to be NHLers at some point. It doesn't matter that it's not right now.
Right. Marcus Sorensen also, you know, we saw late in the season, he's going to be an interesting player to watch. He's got blazing speed. He might be the fastest player in the entire San Jose organization. I mean, he's that fast. Peter DeBoer leading heavily on him for, you know, in the playoffs. I think that shows the trust that he had in him. He's an RFA. That's going to be an interesting bit to watch, because as he moved up the lineup, and in fact, he was on the second line in the last game, you know, with Bodker kind of sliding back and Ward and all those guys. you know, is he a player that, to bring up, we are all Kevin's favorite player, you know, Victor Arvidsson type that's just a late bloomer and got passed over and then, you know, takes a year to figure it out and next year comes out blazing. Marcus Sorensen will shoot the puck from anywhere. He's a gunslinger. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what the Sharks, do with him.
Who do you think Sorensen could replace in the lineup to be regular? Is a question in the chat.
I don't know if it's replace. I think that he's, you know, probably going to be in a bottom six role, adding speed. He's a very dangerous penalty killer. He's effective there. He has a tendency to float a little bit, and that comes back to his, you know, European training. I think that, you know, as a summer here and working out, and you know, he's not a finished product, but there's enough pieces there where I think that he could be in that mix, duking it out for jobs. And it does come down to, you know, roster space.
Yeah.
You know, if you're keeping, you know, Thornton and Marleau are back and you can't move Bodker or Ward, you know, Haley, you know, as a UFA, do you bring him back? There's a lot of moving pieces, and not the least of which is the expansion draft, which is just going to evaporate somebody from your lineup.
Right. M. Hackle, just before I hand this over to Jerk, it just said, I thought Timo shot from everywhere. Timo did shoot from everywhere. The problem is not all the shots he took were very good.
Right.
This is a criticism that came from both Peter DeBoer and Roy Sommer over the course of the season, is that, yeah, you like a guy that shoots from everywhere, obviously, but the problem is his shot selection was still very junior hockey.
Right, and that was our critique of him way back, even with the Barracuda,
right,
you know, when he came back there. So it's almost like we know what we're talking about once in a while.
Maybe. Jerk, what's your thoughts on the kids?
You know, the kids that did come into the lineup this year, I was very impressed. One of the things that stood out to me about Kevin LeBanc, yes, he's got a good shot. Yes, his speed is good. But I felt, and I said it many times on the many different platforms that, you know, Pucknology, Teal Town USA offers, you know, even if he's not putting up points, he's a very smart player. He does a lot of all the right things, you know, with and without the puck. I was a big fan of his game, and I hope he takes a step forward. Zach mentions Marcus Sorensen, you know, his speed, obviously an asset. We saw him by the end of things in game six, higher in the lineup than a Bodker and a Hansen. And again, you know, a very smart player, takes a lot of high percentage shots, and he's somebody who you can definitely be excited for. I thought Timo Meier's regular season was at best, but as soon as the playoffs started, he was my favorite player to watch, and he was part of that really good fourth line in the playoffs with him, Sorensen, and Tierney, and I was upset that it got broken up, but then, you know, they had him on Hurdle's wing, and I was just as much a fan of that as well. So I think LeBanc, Sorensen, and Meier are going to be your three guys to kind of look forward to, at least for the near future, you know, I would say as early as next year, and then kind of long-term, you know, Rourke Chartier, I think at best is maybe a third line center, but there's nothing saying he couldn't jump up into the lineup if he can, you know, find some of the scoring that he had that one year with Kelowna. I'm a big fan of Adam Haluka. You know, I think he's a very physical, but a very smart player as well. I would like to see him more, get a little better on the offensive side of things, but I think there's a lot of good pieces that the Sharks currently have in their system, and it's just a matter of time before we can see if they become great pieces or if they'll just stay good pieces. And obviously Danny O'Regan, you know, I said it before, put up a lot of points in the AHL, but again, very smart player, defensively responsible, sees the ice better than anybody on the Barracuda, I would say, and he's one of those guys where you hope that his level of play translates to the NHL level.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get to the expansion draft and everything else, I thought we should probably quickly just talk on goaltending quick. What do you guys, any thoughts on the goaltending this year? I know it shouldn't take very long. What did you think of Jones this year, I guess, is the question that I have.
Yeah, it won't take too long because we only saw Aaron Dale for a couple games, so that's What do you think, Jerk?
You know what? From what I saw from Aaron Dell, the very limited starts, I was a big fan. You know, I honestly didn't think there was a drop-off between him and Jones. I thought Dell played fantastically. As for Jones, there was a part of me that was a little worried he might have been dealing with something, you know, February, March, April, around the time the Sharks were slumping, just because it seemed like a majority of the goals he was letting in were either five-hole or over the shoulder glove side, and it kind of made me wonder if something in that area was affecting him to where he couldn't move it at the rate that he would like. But other than that, I mean, I thought Jones was a damn good goalie, and I'm really glad that we have him for another year at such a cheap salary.
What do you think he gets when it's time to put the money on the check?
I'm thinking it's going to be minimum. I think it's double what he's making now, so $6 million. Just because he has shown that he can be an elite goalie, especially in the Stanley Cup final last year. I know, hot take. But you know what? If he has another good year, I would not be surprised. Don't at me.
Don't at him. I'm adding him right now, actually.
I'm about to at you all over the place.
Go ahead, Zach.
Where do we start? I think Martin Jones is an NHL caliber starting goaltender. He is a bona fide number one. To call him elite, I'm not sure I can get there.
I like this can of worms I just opened.
Yeah. The great work by, and I'm going to butcher his name, Nick Murcad, and to help quantify different scoring area danger zones and save percentages thereof. And then Ian Fleming, who makes the save chart that I'm sure all of you see me post constantly about, you know, stacking up goalies, comparing the two on high danger, medium danger, low danger, goal saved against average, et cetera. If you look at Jones overall, he's struggling, and this is something we've seen the last couple of years with medium danger shots. He's NHL average at low danger, and he's slightly above average at high danger. If you're elite, your chart looks more like Aaron Dell's, who is firmly to the right of all NHL averages. I'm not saying Aaron Dell is
much smaller sample size.
Much smaller sample size. I was going to put every asterisk that any of you can type. But what I'm saying is that the numbers, the charts, it looks more like that. When you have a weakness, and especially medium danger. You know, that's pretty much the area right outside the home plate area, not quite out to the periphery, to the boards, to the blue line. That's, and it's historical, not just this year. That's been a weak point in Martin Jones' game. That to me does not scream elite. Do I think Martin Jones is a bona fide 65-game starter in the NHL? He can be, definitely. Mm-hmm. Do I think that he was run down at the end of the season? I certainly think that as well. You know, especially after a long playoff run, the condensed schedule, March being a game, you know, every other day, there was just so much going on there. I think a better deployment plan for Aaron Dell next year, both of those goalies are under contract, is going to go a long way to help keeping Martin Jones fresh and effective when you actually need him. You know, a game against the Florida Panthers does not matter if Martin Jones plays that game. It just doesn't. You're not going to convince me of that. I'm sorry. Carolina Hurricanes, don't care. Throw Aaron Dell out there. If he gives up seven, leave him in there. It's a night off for Jones. Does not matter. So I think Martin Jones, and an interesting thing that Doug Wilson did share at the media day, he said that getting Martin Jones and Mark Edward Vlasic he called them crucial to the team's success. And he said getting them signed to extensions this summer is a focal point for the Sharks front office. That doesn't mean they will get done, but if, you know, as soon as July 1 hits, if if you've got half your team working with Mark Edward Vlasic and Martin Jones, the other half in free agency, that, you know, that's going to be where they're at. They know that those two players, they're slated for UFA. And if the Sharks lose those two, then yeah, you can really start talking about a teardown. You really can to me. You know, Mark Edward Vlasic is a number one defender on most other teams in the NHL. Martin Jones is a bona fide starter.
Yeah, look, for me, for Martin Jones, for me, I think, like, you know, I like Martin Jones. And I know I got in a lot of trouble during the playoffs because Martin Jones let in a lot of bad goals. Now, his overall numbers were fine, but a lot of the goals he let in, man, they were brutal. So I know I got in a lot of trouble for that because people were like, you're blaming Jones. I wasn't blaming Jones. I was just saying he let in a bad goal. you know, Martin Jones is a guy that obviously the future, he's the guy that's going to start. You're not going to go and, you know, just find another goaltender. You know, Martin Jones to me, now I'm not a big give the goalie all the money person. So, I mean, if he gets five, you know, if he gets over five, I'm probably kind of annoyed just because I don't want, you know, look at the salary cap's not going anywhere. You have players, you know, you have Vlasic that's going to sign. If you're going to give Jones $6 million, I mean, you know, you're going to have trouble filling in those peripheral pieces very quickly. If those guys are, you know, let's say Vlasic makes seven, let's say Vlasic gets seven, let's say Jones gets six. I mean, there's $13 million. That's, you know, with on top of Burns already making eight. I mean, you're going to run into depth problems very, very quickly. So I would like to see, you know, something lower, something in the five range, less than five would be ideal. But, you know, we'll see what he actually pulls on the open market. I'm very much in the sense that, you know, Jones is, you know, he played like an elite goalie last year. And I think this is where, you know, some people are getting trouble. But I mean, even in the summer, I caution people like, okay, but you know, let's not anoint this franchise tag on, you know, on him too early. Cause you know, a lot of after last season, you know, everyone was talking about, oh, you know, he's the franchise goalie, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, let's roll that back. It's one season. Let's tame that a little bit. And I think this year we were rightfully, you know, doing so. So I don't know. I mean, that's kind of my take on Martin Jones. I hope he doesn't, you know, completely ring the bell, because I think that teams that pay their goalies too much have trouble with depth.
Dallas.
Exactly, Dallas. Jeez.
Especially for a goalie that isn't truly elite.
Yes. Yeah, no, exactly. Like, I you know what? Between four and five, I'd be ecstatic to get Jones for between four and five. Does he get more? Maybe. Who knows? We'll see. See how good his agent is. What do we have next? We have, oh man, expansion draft, RFAs, UFAs, trades. What are you guys thinking coming up here? Actually, Hockey Jerk, you've been quiet for a while. What do you think the Sharks do when it comes to UFAs, RFAs, the whole nine yards? Do they get John Tavares?
I hope so. We're let's see. We're about 15 months away from when he's available. So just start the counter now. I'll have the link on my Twitter account. I mean, just looking, I'm going to leave Thornton and Marlowe out of this conversation just because we kind of already touched on that. But
yes,
you look at a Melker Carlson, who's a restricted free agent. I think for the right dollar, absolutely, you bring him back. You know, Zach said earlier, he probably...
I love Melker.
I do too. You know what? He's probably the one guy for me that I'm okay with capping around, you know, 30 points, just because, you know, he's a solid penalty killer and he's shown he can play anywhere in the lineup, you know? And Chris Tierney, again, yes, he's 22, but we've kind of talked about, you know, it's been a lot of the same the last couple of years. And I personally think a Danny O'Regan or a Brian Carpenter, God willing, he comes back, can step into his spot with no drop off. Mm-hmm. Michael Haley, who's a UFA, you take him or leave him. And Jonas Donskoy, I mean, yes, you know, he had 10 million separated shoulders this year, but he's 25, and you kind of wanted him to take some steps this year. I mean, obviously kind of difficult, as I said, 10 million separated shoulders, but I think for Jonas Donskoy, I think you do what you did with Matt Nieto, where you give him 1 year and you see what he can do. And if he doesn't pan out, then bye.
Yeah.
Basically. Decor's locked up, although, you know what, just looking at the decor right now, I really think it's going to be Dylan DeMello who gets claimed by Las Vegas, just because he's young, only 23 years old, but he's proven to be an NHL caliber defenseman. He's got next season at under $1 million, so it's very affordable for a guy who is a for sure NHL defenseman, as I said before. And then, you know, like a Marcus Sorensen, Mirko Mueller, Joachim Ryan, even a Barkley Goodrow, I see these are all guys who will most likely be brought back in some capacity. Maybe if Barkley Goodrow doesn't want another year in the AHL, I could see him leave, but at the same time, I don't think there's a reason for him to leave. And then Faze, who are on the Barracuda, Heed, Buddy Robinson, Ryan Carpenter, Troy Grosnick, these are all guys who, you know, have excelled in the Barracuda in some capacity this year. And I believe it was Zach last night who said on Twitter, you know, if Heed and Grosnick and all of them want to come back, it's going to be a Royal Rumble for some roster spots for sure. Especially those three, Carpenter, Grosnick, Heed. I think it would be beneficial for them to move on and find an NHL roster spot on a different team, because I would say they're all three NHL players and they're not going to be NHL players on this team. And, you know, as for Buddy Robinson, I think he's a guy who benefits from Vegas coming into the NHL, because Buddy Robinson is a guy you can, he's a guy you can try out in your bottom six. And if he doesn't work out, you can probably sneak him back into the AHL.
Yeah.
But I've liked what I saw from him with the Barracuda. He's probably somebody I hope the Sharks can get signed and keep him on the Barracuda, because I think he's brought a lot to the team.
Zach, what are your thoughts for off-season transactions and whatnot?
So I'm going to try to do this rapid-fire style. Carlson at 1.65, I think that's a very good deal. He's an RFA. I'd be fine with him going to around two. I think he's just very, very versatile. Donskoy, I think with the injured year, probably helps the Sharks save a little bit in his RFA negotiations, but I would 100% bring him back. Chris Tierney, you know, he's an RFA. I just feel his skill set, you know, he's an NHLer for sure, but I feel like the Barracuda offer that down below as well. So those are the RFAs. Michael Haley, give or take. I think that there's a non-zero chance that he's back with the Sharks, but it'll be interesting what they do there. Armalis is gone. He's going to head back to Europe. Sorensen and Armalis is an RFA. Sorensen, I think 100% the Sharks are going to look to try to keep in the fold. It'll be interesting what that contract looks like. You know, he's 25, so he might be a little bit pricier to keep around, as he's likely going to have, you know, opportunities in Europe as well. Interesting that nobody's really talked about this, including us. Mirko Mueller's an RFA. So what do you do there on a player that's really kind of quickly getting leapfrogged on your depth chart as a former first overall pick? That's going to be an interesting one. That might be a bargaining chip.
Expansion bait.
You know, yeah, you know, and that way, you know, Patrick Minnelli, RFA, he's been stepped over by DeSimone and Middleton, so that, you know, he's a minor leaguer. I don't see him doing much. We've talked about Heed. I totally agree with Jerick. Buddy Robinson's a really interesting player. You know, at that size, that's, you know, he's got all the check boxes. It's just putting it together. And I think he's looked as good as I've ever seen him. I didn't see him too much when he was out east, but I, you know, caught him here and there. You know, you put him with a real responsible center like Rourke Chartier and just kind of let him loose on that wing. You know, I agree with Jerick. You know, he's going to be contending for an NHL roster spot And it'll be interesting if he, like Ryan Carpenter and Troy Grosnick and Tim Heed, by extension, kind of really take their time and look at their options and maybe see who signs where and where their best opportunity is. Grosnick, I think, is going to sign elsewhere. And then down at the bottom, you have Zach Sortini and Dan Kelly, which, they're good character guys. They're good locker room guys. But at this point, they're probably, stuck as AHL players. Yeah. And so do they even go somewhere else where it's like they have zero chance for a call up, zero. Why the heck not? And as far as expansion goes, I'm firmly the Sharks are going to lose a defender. You're going to have Mirko Mueller, Dylan DeMello, Brendan Dillon exposed for sure, and Paul Martin, just for sake of argument. And then it comes down to what Doug Wilson does for his draft strategy or his protection strategy with Burns, Vlasic, Braun, and Schlemko. There's a chance that they protect Schlemko just for estate planning, looking at those contracts that they're going to have to get done. Vlasic's going to get easily six plus million a year without batting an eye. Martin Jones, you're probably talking in the five-ish neighborhood to bring back. And that money's got to come from somewhere in a salary cap system.
Yep.
So if I had to pick, I think that if Braun is – I think whoever's exposed out of Braun – and Schlemko, if they go with the 7-3, is the selection. And if they somehow go 8 skaters and
I up think... Up top, though, just not to cut you off, but up top, though, I mean, I think up top's going to be interesting, too, though, because they're going to have – they still have to expose a certain number of players that meet the criteria.
And they will.
Which they will, I think. And I think that, there might be some interesting players up there to Vegas, too, I think. Like, I don't think they're gonna roll the dice on a Bodker $4 million deal, but I expose Chris Tierney, and I think Chris Tierney could easily get snatched up.
So and over at, some, go for it.
Jerry. Sorry, I just want to say something else to consider is that of the forwards the Sharks have, Yannick Hansen is the only one that they have to protect.
Correct.
No move, no trade clause. Everybody else, they theoretically don't have to protect. So it gives them a little more flexibility in protecting their decor if they do want to go the 8 skater route. But again, not ideal.
But actually, you're not going to... Sorry, go ahead.
Hansen can be exposed.
No, Doug Wilson's made it sound like it was a part of the trade that he wouldn't be exposed when he waived his no.
That might be a handshake deal, but they have nobody that they're mandated to protect. He said exactly that at the media day.
Oh, okay.
Ah, well, there you go. Forget everything I just said.
Forget it.
Well, that's not to say it's like I would not be shocked whatsoever if Doug Wilson and Joe Thornton have a July 1st handshake deal.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, that would surprise me about as much as the sun coming up in the east tomorrow morning.
No doubt.
That's how shocking that would be to me. So real quick, I have planmyteam.com has a great simulator. Okay. One of their experts over there, so go check out my team and all the other teams, and you can play around with all the expansion draft. Warning, it will take you, like, all night. It's so addicting. For the Sharks, the forwards that they out of their protection list, Barclay Goodrow, Buddy Robinson, Chris Tierney, Yannick Hansen, Joe Pavelski, Joe Thornton, Joel Ward, Logan Couture, Melker Carlson, Michael Haley, Michael Bodker, Patrick Marleau, Ryan Carpenter, Tomas Hertl, Zach Sortini. Those are the only players, only forwards that are exposable. And then it's pretty much, everyone we talked about on defense, it's Dylan Burns, right. Schlemko, DeMello, Braun, Vlasic, Mueller, Martin, Kelly. Joachim Ryan, Tim Heed, all those guys are protected already. And then on defense, in goal, it's Jones, Dell, Grosnick, and Martin Jones. That was the one player, like I said, Doug Wilson gave us. Martin Jones will be protected. So, from there, I actually have Chris Tierney getting protected. I have their only exposed players that are, serviceable. Joel Ward, Goodrow, and Carpenter. But Carpenter is also UFA. So, you know, I think he's safe from expansion, but.
Yeah, because why are you going to, if you're an expansion team, why are you going to waste a pick on a UFA if you couldn't get them under contract when you have your window? It doesn't make sense.
Right. So realistically, the only forwards that are under contract and draftable in my model is Joel Ward, because they're going to protect Tierney, Hansen, Pavelski, Couture, Carlson, Bodker, Hurdle. So, you know, is it Joel, like, which player would you rather have? Joel Ward or David Schlemko? Ward or Dylan DeMello?
Dylan DeMello.
Joel Ward, Brendan Dillon.
That one.
But that's my point. We're on choice number three. Okay, so you had to pause there. Joel Ward or Mirko Mueller?
Neither. Yeah, just fire them both into the sun.
And then Joel Ward or Paul Martin?
Paul Martin.
Fire them both into the sun.
Well, at least Jerk gave real answers.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. I can't fire North Korea. I thought we could send people into the sun. North Korea. All right.
We're doctors. We're not nuclear scientists.
Yeah. Okay, that was the theme here. We're in an autopsy.
Right. Okay. My bad. let me just go through this list quick because we're running long even for this stylish show, which we knew was going to be longer.
We warned everybody.
Yes, we did warn everyone. You know, I'm going to echo a lot of things. Obviously, look at Armalis is gone. I bring Sorensen back. I bring both Donskoy and Carlson back. Both aren't going to take very much to re-sign. And so I think that the risk reward, you know, short contract, buy Donskoy some new shoulders, you know, robotic shoulders, and he'll be fine. I expose Chris Tierney in the expansion draft, and if no one takes him, then I, you know, again, maybe a short deal there. I hate just letting an RFA walk for nothing. I think Chris Tierney has value, and you would want to get something. You don't want to just let them walk for nothing. Mirko, I think they re-sign Mirko. You know, Mirko shocked me when he got called up ahead of some of the guys he got called up for. So obviously the Sharks still see something there. So Mirko Mueller getting re-signed would not shock me at all. Also wouldn't shock me to see a team like Vegas take a flyer on him because he's cheap and, you know, they do need to build some back end as well. Patrick McNally, I think, is probably done. He does have arbitration rights, but I don't think it's going to matter. Tim Heed is gone. Buddy Robinson, I would like to have back, but, you know, again, we don't know. Joachim Ryan, you absolutely bring back. I bring back Yevpilovs for the right amount of money. I think there's still upside there. I really like, you know, he's obviously not going to be the 100-point guy in the queue, but he has this real Swiss Army knife-ness about him that I really, really like. So I would definitely see if you can build on that. Carpenter's gone. Grosnick's probably gone. Stratini and Kelly, look, you know, you don't need these guys. There's going to be, you've got so many guys that are coming over. We don't know if Noah Rod's going back next year. We don't know if any, oh, is he? Okay. There's probably other people that, you know, other prospects that are going to come. Look at Dan Kelly. Do you really want Dan Kelly to be taking ice time away from Jeremy Waugh? Not me.
Or Kevin Fitzgerald.
Or Kevin Fitzgerald. Exactly. Like there's that blue line is going to be so log jammed next year that, you know, even with Tim Heed likely being gone, you know, you want to get Jeremy Waugh in there.
You're telling me you don't want to bring back discount Roman Pollock?
No, I don't.
What kind of deal do you think Joachim Ryan gets? Because he's an RFA as well.
Joachim Ryan probably gets another two-way deal, though.
So something more.
Yeah, I would say, though.
Yeah.
I could see with Ryan, I could see them go the Grosnick route where year one is a two way, year two is a one way.
I can see that.
Yeah, that's what I think too. Let's take a look here. Okay, anything anything found around who's coming? Who do you expect to see in Barracuda camp next spring, Zach? Just because I don't have it off the top of my head.
I mean, there's a number of players that are going to be forced to turn professional one way or the other. One of them is Jeremy Waugh, second round pick in 2015, cost quite a bit to trade up with Tampa Bay to get him. But he'll be turning pro, as well as Kevin Fitzgerald. Both of those are QMJHL defenders that will be aging out of the CHL. From there, realistically, it comes down to Rudolf Baukers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to be an overager. Manuel Werder as well. Those are all players that are going to be aging out of the CHL. So those are guys that they're going to have to find homes with. I did speak with Manuel Werder's camp. He was the fifth round pick in 2016. He's in San Jose, and discussions are already underway. So that is something of interest there. So they're looking real hard at getting him under contract. He'll probably be with the Barracuda. Joachim Blichfeld probably is going back to Portland. He was a key cog there. He'll be even more important as that young team grows. Dylan Gambrell is interesting. I think he's probably going to return to the University of Denver. I feel like if he would have signed, it would have already happened by now. So I've got no intel on that, but it's just a feeling.
Latunov's returning for another year of school.
Right. He's in that same camp. Hockey Jerk is wrong. Jamie Murray won't be with the Barracuda next year.
all right. Well,
I guess he could be. I really think the Barracuda have two new goaltenders.
Do they bring back the Bumblebee?
Probably not. I've not been wildly impressed, but Nabokov has done some great work. Armalis, for all the slings and arrows cast at him, I think he's improved greatly. I think Hedberg and Nabokov have done some great work with Grosnick, as well as his hard work over the summer. Parker Gahagan is still on the Sharks' radar, I'm told. There's quite a few things that I can't get into that are holding that up. But it's not for lack of interest on both sides. So maybe. But we'll see. For me, the Sharks really have to address goaltending this offseason organizationally.
Yes.
The Barracuda need at least one more goaltender, no matter what. Ideally, you would like to have one down in the ECHL. So let's say Dr. Jerk is right, and Jamie Murray comes up. You'd still like to have somebody developing down there at the ECHL level, getting some starts, getting used to the pro game. So you need one goalie for one goalie at the ECHL level, one goalie for the AHL level, and then after that, it's Jake Kupse has not looked good at Union. Mike Robinson has had a dismal start, draft plus one and draft plus 2 year. There's nothing promising there as far as his underlying stats or where his progression is going. Sharks are going to pick somewhere around 20, probably. I wouldn't mind reaching and taking Jake Oettinger at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him this summer out at the NJEC. He's big. He's smart. As a true freshman, walked into Boston University and stole that job. That's a player that I'd really like to see the Sharks look at with that first round pick, because this is coming from somebody that generally hates the idea of goalies in the first round.
I'm very much there with you.
Right.
Yep. Same as well.
But I'm looking at the organizational need. Goalies are a 4 to 5, 6 year window anyway. 5 years down the road, Martin Jones is 33.
Right.
That's just planning. So the Sharks have to get some prospects in here that have NHL upside. As much as impressive as Arundel is, I'm not sure he's an NHL starter. And I don't think that's a slight. Even being a backup in the NHL is amazing.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, no, I mean, I've always been of that camp.
Yeah. And especially, you know, with the second, third, and fourth, where you, and that's why I wouldn't mind chasing Jake Oettinger at pick number 20, because you're not going to be able to wrap back around it too and get like a Maxim Zhukov out of the USHL with a second round pick. That's not going to happen. There's no second round pick right now.
Right.
Doug Wilson might be cooking something up. You know, he's famous for his phone calls. I'm sure he's going to make them. Primo, if he's there. And yeah, Primo, Caden Primo, I'd probably take earlier than the fifth.
We have no choice.
Yeah. One guy, I the Sharks have 3 7th round picks, and a guy that I've really liked that's a netminder, he plays for the Victoria Royals. I've seen quite a bit of him, is Griffin Outhouse. He's not the biggest guy, but I really like his game. And if that's an overager, you've got to see 2 years of him in the WHL. That would be a guy I wouldn't mind taking a flyer on with, you know, say Ottawa, you know, Ottawa's 7th round pick or something like that. Because they're still in it. That's going to be a worse 7th round pick than the Sharks.
That's true.
Yes, Chris, I've been talking about Outhouse for a while. I've been pumping him up since last year. I couldn't believe he didn't get drafted.
Well, there we go. All right. You know what? I think I'm gonna call it there, since IC started streaming 2 hours ago. So, thank you for sitting through this wonderful autopsy of autopsies. I think we pulled all the organs out onto the table. We checked them all over, and you know, it is what it is. I hope that this was informative. I hope that, you know, you sat here and listened and said, man, those guys are dumb, or man, those guys are great, or just, you know, man, I didn't even consider that. And if you did any of those things, then we've done our job. Friday night, we will be on after the Barracuda game. Sunday, we will be on after the Barracuda game. And I do want to try and fit some of these type of shows in where we actually talk about NHL things as well. Thank you for watching. I'm going to go around the table and get some final thoughts, and then we're going to get the hell out of here. Mr. Hockey Jerk, final thoughts. Where can we find you? And are you thinking that the Sharks will be better next year, the same, or worse?
Well, you know, we've done our paperwork, as, you know, we are all doctors here. You know, we've made cuts, we've made decisions, and you know what? This team... I don't think they'll be better next year. If they are, pull up this episode and just send it to my Twitter every day next season. I think they'll be around the same. Like I said earlier, you know, they've still got some big guys not named Thornton and Marlowe, and I think that's going to be key for the operation next year. No pun intended, of course. As for what I'm up to, you can follow me on Twitter at @hockey_jerk. We just recorded the final episode of the Pucknologists podcast. I believe we recorded it Monday night, and it came out yesterday, I think. All my days are running together, I'll be honest with you. But episode number 26, it is the last one of the season, so myself, Rocket, and AJ will... you know, be on vacation, going to the beach. I think we have a zip lining day trip planned. That's going to be fun. So for that project, we'll be back. But as for this project, TTG Reborn, I hope that Ian accepts my desire to move up from a PTO to a real contract. In that case, you'll see me a lot more. Back to you, Ian.
Zach, same thing, same question.
I think the Sharks will be a similar team next season with an improved result. I'm not sure if they're, you know, to call them a Stanley Cup contender might be a stretch, but are they going to be able to make some noise in the playoff? And hey, if lightning, you know, catch lightning in a bottle, why the heck not? If Carolina can do it for a year, why not San Jose? I think the pieces will be there for at least another kick at the old Stanley Cup can. But Yeah, next year is the last year. I think after that, you really do have to really take a hard look at, you know, what pieces are there moving forward. I would probably extend Dr. Jerk that contract, Ian. I think it's,
I'm thinking so.
Yeah, but you know, hey, I mean, you know, you're our GM, so ultimately the decision is up to you. I'm just your humble scout.
Oh man! All right. Where can they find your stuff?
Oh, I've got a ton of stuff coming all over the Twitters. So follow me at Zach the Bear, at ZAKKTHEBEAR. My April draft rankings are up over at thehockeyprofits.com. Go check those out. I've just been doing daily data dumps onto thehockeywriters.com on everything for the Sharks, and I will be traveling out to Stockton to cover the San Jose Barracuda versus Stockton Heat this Friday and Sunday, joining the Barracuda After Dark in progress with some news from the Cuda locker room.
Yeah, I'm Ian Reed. I think that the Sharks are stuck in a purgatory of sorts. I think that I think they'll be, you know, about the same next year. Probably a better result just because you'd hope people would be less injured, but pain's coming for this team, guys. It's coming. It might not be next year. It might not be the year after, but it's coming.
But soon.
Yes. Yeah. Pain's coming, unfortunately. Other than that, though, you can follow. We have a Twitter for the show at TTG Reborn. And what I'm trying to do on there is basically make that your one-stop for anything that any of us are doing and a part of the TTG team, which for those that don't know who like I have in mind for this whole team, that's obviously Zach, it's Hockey Jerk, it's Kevin, it's myself, it's Joe. So anytime any of us do something, I'm going to make sure that it's on that TTG, that Twitter feed. So if you want all your TTG hosts doing goings on in one place, check out that Twitter. You can also follow me at Ian Vlogs Hockey. I will be writing on Teal Town USA, and you know, otherwise just being here talking into my camera on YouTube. Other than that, guys, thanks again so much. I know this was a long show, so thanks for sticking through it, and have yourselves an excellent night.